Hello, friends and politicos. Welcome into Studio 2. I'm Avi Wolfman-Arendt.
And I'm Cherry Gregg. Avi, ballots have been cast, results have been tallied, and now it is time to break it all down. We have gathered a round table of experts to analyze Election Day. We'll talk about Mayor-elect Sherelle Parker making history. Here she is last night.
Who is Sherelle Parker going to be? A get-it-done Philadelphian, a get-it-done mayor who won't ever forget her deep roots. I'm Philly born, I'm Philly bred, and I'll be a Philadelphian till I'm dead. I love you, Philly. We're going to do this together.
She knows how to turn a phrase.
I love a good rhyme.
First woman and first black woman in that role as mayor. We'll dig into that more later. Plus, we'll talk about the tight race for city council at large. Obviously, so much to talk about, as well as the contest in the burbs and statewide.
And Cherry, we want to talk to you.
Yes.
You being the listener, what are your takeaways from yesterday's results? What are your lingering questions? Email us, studio2@whyy.org. Or give us a call, 888-477-9499. First, let's do a few non-election headlines,
yes,
starting with what clearly looks like the most important story of the day. Oh, God. People Magazine has designated Philadelphia Eagles offensive lineman Jason Kelce as one of the sexiest men alive.
Ooh.
I don't have too much more to add on that, Cherry. Do you?
Well, I will say his beard is amazing,
Great beard.
And he has a lot of swag.
Mm-hmm.
And congratulations. I don't know how his wife, the Mrs. Kelce, feels about
maybe
that.
Maybe she loves it. I don't know.
You know, but maybe she absolutely loves it and agrees. But he's also on a list with people like Lenny Kravitz, who I follow on Instagram, who's really sexy. So he's in great company, you know.
I promise we're going to get to the politics roundtable. I promise we will get there.
Yes, but he did not make the cover of People magazine, just so you know.
Yeah.
And the sexiest man alive for 2023, Patrick Dempsey.
Yeah, I was looking at this.
Wow.
And trying to think like a magazine editor.
Mm.
And when I think of Jason Kelce, and I'm not saying he's a bad looking guy, I'm just saying it makes sense to pick someone who's sort of an unorthodox pick because that generates conversation.
Mm-hmm.
It definitely makes sense to pick someone whose brother happens to be dating the biggest pop star in the universe.
Yeah, because you get to say Taylor Swift in the same sentence.
And the whole point of this is for people like us to say the name People Magazine over and over and over again, and they have been successful in that.
And
well,
we did
done.
Say it a couple of times there. But congratulations to Jason Kelce.
How about to a selection with a bit more consequence now? New Jersey. Cherry, take it away.
Oh, yeah. Democrats held on to their legislative majority in the state house. This is despite hopes from Republicans that they would flip one of the chambers. Avi, Republicans thought that they were going to capitalize on Biden's low popularity and issues of offshore wind farms. We did a whole show about that, as well as parental rights in schools. But Democrats, they pressed issues around abortion rights. They pushed for property tax relief over the summer, and they were successful. They gained seats.
They did. They held their.
Yes.
Well, like everything's preliminary right now, but they held those margins in the Senate and the Assembly. They expanded their margins.
Mm-hmm.
So this was not a red wave at all. In fact,
no.
It was sort of a blue tide the other direction.
I know. It was, you know, a big win for Democrats in New Jersey. And remember Ed, the truck driver, Durr,
mm-hmm.
the Republican out of Gloucester County that unseated state Senate President Steve Sweeney a couple of years ago?
I do.
Well, he lost.
Yep.
To Democrat John Berzicelli.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a big deal. That was a pretty big deal and another upset. Another big contest in the 11th district at the Shore, New Jersey, State Senator Vin Gopal fought off his Republican challenger, Steve. I'm messing up his name.
Dinistrian.
Yeah. There you go. So that was two major races mm-hmm. in our region impacted there. And I apologize, Steve Dinistrian, that I messed up your name. Congratulations to the Democrats in New Jersey on those wins.
Yeah, and we had Brent Johnson of NJN.com on the show last week.
Yeah.
And a lot of smart folks really thought the Republicans were going to make some gains here. If you recall, in 2021, Phil Murphy was running for re-election and had a very tight race against his Republican challenger, Jack Cittarelli. So I think people saw that as sort of a leading indicator into this election, and it just wasn't.
It wasn't. And we'll, you know, we'll talk about what this says. The Democratic kind of wins across New Jersey, also in Pennsylvania. We'll talk about that a little bit more. And in our second segment, now on to
government in action.
Yeah.
Now, from government elections to government in action. I like the story from Billy Penn about a newly introduced city council bill that would ban food trucks at a very busy section in the Fishtown neighborhood of Philadelphia. Mm-hmm. If you've ever been to Frankfort and Girard Avenue, it's a very hopping place.
It is.
Fishtown's a very hopping neighborhood right now. And this intersection has always had a great selection of food trucks. But some of the local business owners, not big fans of these food trucks. They don't abide by all of the rules, allegedly, including when they're supposed to be open. Mm-hmm. Some people think they bring in a little too much traffic and noise. And so now there is a bill on the table to ban them. I love these sort of small g government stories, these neighborhood conflicts, because they often tease out much bigger issues. And you always have sort of interesting perspectives from all sides. And we'll see what happens here with the food trucks at Frankfort and Girard. But it's generated a ton of conversation in that neighborhood.
And what's interesting is that these food trucks have been coming there for well over a decade.
They've been there a long
time. Yeah, a long time. Yeah. And, you know, they say a lot of times people just come there for the cheap food at the food trucks.
I'm raising my hand.
And not necessarily for the restaurants themselves. But, you know, they get to stay open late because they don't have to, you know, follow by things. So that is definitely an issue. And there have been clashes over the years about the time, their closing time. So we'll see what happens at city council.
And I do have to mention this, that some of the neighborhood residents, if you've been to this intersection, there's quite a few bars frequented by younger men who enjoy a drink or two, and the residents have nicknamed the intersection the Bromuda Triangle, which just
Bromuda Triangle.
That's a very good, because it's also an oddly shaped intersection, so it kind of looks triangular. Just hats off for a good nickname. Nothing to say about the food truck controversy. I just want to acknowledge
I love a good pun. Yeah, you
I
do.
I love a good pun.
So kudos to that pun. Also, kudos to disability rights advocates. Mm-hmm. They won big yesterday on Election Day. Voters in Philadelphia decided to keep the office for the people with disabilities. Voters approved this by nearly 86% of those who cast ballots.
Yep.
And this office, in case you didn't know, they ensured that the city complies with the accessibility laws, like the Americans with Disabilities Act and the Fair Housing Act. Kenny had created it in 2017 by an executive order. But, you know, once a mayor leaves, it could be repealed. So this would make it permanent and within now the home rule charter for the city. And I remember, Avi, back in 2019, I don't know if you remember this, there was this big lawsuit over the curb cuts in the city.
I do recall that.
And people with disabilities were having really hard times getting around. And the city settled that lawsuit saying that they would fix thousands and thousands of these curb cuts. So this is like sort of an expansion of that. And the city has a lot of people with disabilities.
Yeah, I was surprised to read this in the Inquirer's wrap-up. Mm-hmm. Philadelphia has the highest population of people with disabilities out of the top 10 largest cities in the United States. I never knew that.
I didn't know
that either.
I was
a little ashamed that I never knew that, actually. So interesting. And this is one of those ballot questions
that
you see often when you go in the voting booth in Philadelphia. And yes, usually wins. And so oftentimes the framing of these questions matters a lot, but 86% is not close.
Yeah, that's a slam dunk for the Office for the People with Disabilities.
Let's do a little more election talk now, Jerry.
We're digging in now.
And stop me if you've heard this one before. Democrats dominated in the Philly suburbs.
Mm.
For years now, the collar counties around the city have turned increasingly blue. Last night, Dems notched big holds in some places and made big gains in others. And joining us now to recap the battle of the burbs is Kenny Cooper, suburban reporter for WHYY News. Kenny, welcome back to Studio 2.
Thanks for having me. Hey, guys.
So, Kenny, we're going to talk outcome in the collar counties. Lots of wins, but we're going to dig in alpha order. And can we talk about Bucks County? It seems like, in my mind, some of the biggest upsets there. Let's talk about Bucks.
Yeah, Bucks County, lots of upsets and lots of holds. You know, it was only just in 2019 that the Democrats took control of the Bucks County Board of Commissioners for the first time in more than 40 years. And they basically did it again. Diane Marseglia and Bob Harvey, the Democratic incumbents, were able to keep their seats, hold that Democratic majority. And Gene DiGirolamo, the lone Republican, will likely keep his seat. And then if you get even more on a micro level, the Central Book School Board, which is kind of caught a lot of national attention for the anti-LGBTQ rhetoric and decision-making that was going on at the board level, the Democrats did a clean sweep of all of the school board races in Central Bucks that were available to run. So lots of big gains for the Democrats in Bucks County and lots of holds.
Yeah, and if folks don't recall, in Central Bucks, there have been several policies put forward, described by opponents as book bans. We talked about it on the show. Clearly, that was not a winning issue at the polls, Kenny. Let's also move over to Chester. Kind of a similar dynamic to Bucks, where Democrats had just taken control. They were trying to hold. Did they do so in Chester County?
They absolutely did. So Chester County had never had a Democratic majority prior to 2019. And in 2019, they took that majority and they haven't looked back. The Democrats were able to maintain control of that board of commissioners. And they did well at the, you know, on the row office level as well. So just like Bucks County, you have these longtime historically red areas that have not only shifted blue, but are kind of staying blue.
Wow. And I want to go into Delaware and Montgomery counties. Democrats did well there as well.
Yeah. Again, it's like I'm.
You're like a broken record, Kenny.
Yeah, seriously. Delaware County Council was, you know, almost all Republican since the Civil War. And in 2017, they earned their first two seats, the Democrats. In 2019, they took complete control of the board. And the three, you know, Democratic women that gave them that edge in 2019 won again. You know, broken records again. And in Montgomery County, history was made. You know, that was the first of the collar counties to fall to blue and become blue in 2011 when Josh Shapiro was a board of commissioner candidate.
Yeah.
And you know, this time around, Jamila Winder is now the first Black woman to be formally elected as a commissioner in Montgomery County. And Neil Makija, the her running mate, the other Democrat, is the first Asian American in Pennsylvania as a whole to be a county commissioner.
Wow.
So lots of history being made as well.
So when the same thing is happening over and over and over again, Kenny, it's probably not about individual candidates or individual races. It's speaking to something deeper. What do you think is animating suburban voters right now and pushing them toward the Democratic side?
It's a lot of things. And I think they're all kind of happening at once. You have these school board races. You have these book ban proposals. You also have just this kind of, you know, big national argument over abortion. Mm-hmm. And Republicans are finding themselves on the wrong sides of a lot of these key issues for suburban voters. And then you also just have changing demographics. You know, the suburbs don't look like they used to. You know, there's a lot more diversity in the suburbs. They're a lot more welcoming. And as a result, you know, what you're seeing is you're seeing that these, you know, longtime Republican strongholds are breaking.
Very interesting. And Republican incumbent District Attorney Matt Weintraub won re-election. I mean, what does this say about, you know, Republicans? Do they have an opening? Do they have an opportunity here? Even though you see these shifts in demographics and things leaning folks towards blue.
Yes, of course. You know, there's always going to be an opportunity, especially in some of these collar counties that may not be as blue as Montgomery County. For candidates like himself, you know, there's always going to be that familiarity for some voters. And as long as they make, you know, are able to reach across the aisle, you know, voters will vote for them. You know, it's never just a matter of R or D. It's mostly a matter of the way that they carry themselves and how they interact with the community. And as long as you can make those connections, you can, of course, win.
Well, I think, looking at my crystal ball, a lot of folks are going to be looking at these results and these margins and projecting forward to 2024, where the PA suburbs are going to be crucial. And of course, who's going to be covering it? WHYY's Kenny Cooper. Kenny, thank you so much for joining us on Studio 2.
Thanks for having me.
And coming up, our full panel of political experts. They're standing by. Chime in. Give us your thoughts on Election Day. 888-477-9499 or email studio2@whyy.org. We'll be right back. Stick with us.
Thank you. Here at Shortwave Space Camp, we escape our everyday lives to explore the mysteries and quirks of the universe. We find weird, fun, interesting stories that explain how the cosmos is partying all around us. From stars to dwarf planets to black holes and beyond, we've got you. Listen now to the Shortwave podcast from NPR.
Our very official political music.
I like
there.
It.
Welcome into Studio 2, everybody. I'm Avi Wolfman-Aaron.
And I'm Cherry Gregg. We are jumping right into yesterday's election and the results now with a roundtable of guests. It was a big day for Democrats in our region in both Pennsylvania and in New Jersey.
Lucky for us, in the studio, we have three seasoned analysts. Neil Oxman, a media consultant with the Campaign Group. Neil, welcome back to Studio 2.
Thanks, Avi.
Lauren Vitas with Enact Strategies also writes the Broad and Market newsletter. Lauren, welcome.
Always great to be here.
And Mustafa Rashid with Bellevue Strategies. Mustafa, so nice to have you.
Thank you for having me.
And welcome everyone to Studio 2.
Yeah, and listeners, what issues or candidates got you out to the polls? We want to hear from you. Call us. The number is 888-477-9499. You can also email studio2@whyy.org.
Let's start with mayor, folks. Not a surprise in terms of who won, but still historic. The mayor-elect of Philadelphia is a woman and a black woman. And when I say that, and I'll start with you, Lauren, what springs to mind? How do you contextualize the history here?
I mean, it's remarkable. It's also fitting that she's the 100th mayor of mm-hmm. Philadelphia. So it feels like monumental on so many levels. And I think it's also the context, too, is I think people are really looking for change and how the city is being led over the last 8 years and looking for someone who to govern with passion. And in that regard, I don't think we could have picked a more appropriate person than Sherelle Parker. If you've ever heard her speak about her lived experiences, the issues she's tackled as a legislator, both at the state level and the city level, she's a track record of not only getting things done, but just showing up every day fully bought into the work she's doing. And I think that energy and that level of passion about the city is going to be a real breath of fresh air over the next 4 years.
Mustafa, could I have you weigh in on this? Historical significance of Sherelle Parker's
absolutely.
Election.
Congratulations to Sherelle. As Lauren pointed out, the 100th is just, it's significant in mm-hmm. and of itself. As I took my two young children to vote yesterday, and they got a big kick out of voting for a woman. And in 8 years from now, it will be normal. It will be, yeah. You know, this is what young people will grow up knowing, is that a woman is a mayor of the city of Philadelphia, and that's just something that we do now. And I think that Sherelle, it's so unique in her approach to governing and leadership, that we will benefit from it, and I think we're all looking forward to it.
Yeah, and Neil, did you want to add anything to that?
No, I think yeah. I think Lauren and Mustafa said it best.
And so let's talk about her campaign a little bit and the electorate. Like, who do you think voted for Sherelle? Because we had less than a third of the electorate here in the city who cast ballots. Still more than we've seen in past mm-hmm. mayor races, but still, I mean, more people didn't vote than did. Who do you think are the people who said yes and voted for her and who didn't, who tapped out?
Well, I want pulling back just a little bit, Neil and I talked about this a little bit last night, is that it feels like the mail-in balloting has not elevated enlarged the pie. The pie has been the pie, right? This is the number of the people that vote in municipal elections, and this is what we're going to get. And it's just some people now vote early. Some people vote the day of with their ballots. Some people go in person and do it. The electorate is kind of seems what it is. And I think that, you know, for Democrats, especially the city of Philadelphia, starting yesterday as a test run for 2024, we've got to figure out how to grow the pie and make it a little bit better. So to mm-hmm. answer your question about who voted for Sherelle, a lot of middle neighborhoods. A lot of middle neighborhoods. Towards the end, one of the polling numbers showed that the largest block of undecided voters were African-American women. Mm-hmm. And African-American women 50 to 64, those are super voters. And I think Sherelle took more than her fair share of them, and it went from a close race in the primary to being sort of wide open. And I think that's who, you know, and then last night, just Democrats showed up for Sherelle. That's what they do in the general. And part of what David O was trying to do is convince Democrats to vote for him. And I just don't ever think the math is quite going to work out.
Yeah, and I want to, since you mentioned David O, I want to play this clip from him, part of his concession speech. Here's David O last night.
So I congratulate her. I wish her well. It is her responsibility now, and we will all support her to make her the most successful mayor that this city has seen, because that's what's in the public interest.
So, Neil, I want to bring you in the conversation.
I was going to answer Sherry's question. The reason no one votes because there wasn't an election. The last, you know, if you look at, I've done a lot of mayoral campaigns in Philadelphia since 1979. Some contested in the general, some not contested. You know, Rendell, Nutter, Kenny all had essentially non-general elections. I mean, the races were over by the primary. When Sam Katz ran twice against Street, and I did Katz's first race, the only Republican I've ever worked for, you know, out of 750 campaigns, I've done one Republican once. You know, that you had record turnouts. You had 350,000 people vote.
Yeah.
You know, the reason no one votes in these things is because, A, Schrell did not run a general election. Period. There was no general election. They did no TV for the first time. A mayoral campaign did not do a TV. They put up some posters at the end of the campaign. You know, I hope she was taking her time putting an administration together, because that's what she should have been doing instead of campaigning, because she had a walkover. But there were no stakes for anybody. I mean, the Working Families Party tried to make stakes. There were clearly stakes for, you know, for the Supreme Court race. And in fact, if you looked at the Philadelphia percentage of the vote for the Supreme Court races in 2015, when Democrats won three seats, Philadelphia was up here. In 2021, because it was Krasner, it was a general election, and Krasner didn't really have a walkover, Philadelphia's percentage of the statewide vote was much lower, and the Democrat lost for Supreme Court by 25,000 votes.
Wow.
Luckily, enough Philadelphians voted to help for the statewide race. But the fact is, it didn't really say anything about anything. It's not like, oh, we're disinterested. It's a walkover. I mean, next year in the presidential race, you'll have 500,000 to 600,000 Philadelphians vote, because there will be stakes to it. It will matter.
So we're talking now about, you mentioned putting together a cabinet, and perhaps that's what Sherelle Parker's been up to over the last few months.
We hope so.
Lauren Vitas, I want to bring you back into the conversation. I wonder what signals you're looking for to tell you how Sherelle Parker is going to govern. Are you looking at transition team? Are you looking for announcements on departmental appointments? Like, what are you looking for as indicators? Because I do think there's still some mystery around exactly where her priorities are going to be, or her specific policies are going to be. What are the tea leaves you're looking at?
So I think, you know, the best way to look at what someone is going to do is to look at what they've already done. So I think you're going to see Sherelle follow through on a lot of her policy focus as a council person, as mayor, and that is commercial corridors, preserving Black wealth in the neighborhoods, making sure people are able to stay in their homes, increasing Black home ownership, things like that, I think is going to be, you know, what her focus is. Regarding the transition, you know, I had served on a transition team for the last administration. And, you know, to Neil's point, once the primary was over, transition started, even though you knew you had to run that general election race, you don't have luxury of time. You are sworn in on January 2nd. You have to hit the ground running from day one.
Yeah.
And so, you know, what I hope to see in the coming weeks is, who are the people she's going to be surrounding herself with? Who is the managing director? Who are the folks that are heading the departments that deliver city services? And I think that those are the things that I'm looking forward to seeing, is who is her leadership team. You know, it's a big transition going from the fourth floor of City Hall to the second floor and being an executive. So you need to have folks that you can rely on around you that are going to pursue the mission that you lay out. You as mayor, you know, you can't run every department yourself. You have to be able to delegate and have trusted people in those positions. So that's really something I'm looking to see. But I do think the focus is going to be on the neighborhoods.
Interesting.
Yeah.
And I want to ask a follow-up to you.
and Mustafa, I want to bring you in here and talk about, because the police commissioner, something mm-hmm. she mentioned in her acceptance speech yesterday, multiple times. Anytime you talk about it, she talks about the police commissioner. Public safety has been a big topic. What will you be looking at with regard to this issue? And will she get a grace period? Because people think in some regard that she's going to come in and 2 weeks later, all the gun violence is going to stop. Is she going to get like that honeymoon phase at all?
I hope so. And to tie in Ari's question and to Lauren's point, Sherelle has said, judge me on my past experience. That's how I'm going to lead moving forward. Yeah. So public safety has been the number one concern and issue about this candidate. And so for the campaign and the police commissioner, someone who's competent, culturally competent, qualified and understands Philadelphia and its neighborhoods is going to be a critical thing for Sherelle to take a look at. And so that's a great leadership position. And you're right. I don't think we should expect immediate turnaround. These things do take time. But what we're looking for from the mayor-elect and any chief executive of the city is leadership and showing that they can bring all the pieces together to get public safety on the right track.
I know I'm backtracking a little bit here, Neil, but sort of at the core.
Well, I was going to say, lucky for her, the bar is really low. I mean, Jim, I used to think Frank Rizzo was the worst mayor we've ever had. And one of the great delights I've ever had was working for Wilson in 83 when he beat Rizzo in the primary and then was doing Rendell in 91 when he would have beaten Rizzo in the general. But Kenny's been the worst mayor ever. I mean, he's checked out. It's awful. He had a good – from the time he announced through the first year and a half or 2 years, he was terrific. And he did something that I've seen very few mayors do. He put his political capital on the line for the soda tax.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
I mean, and his favorable was here. And when he did that, it dropped. And then it went back. And then once Floyd happened, he just checked out. And, Penn, which I guess runs out of this building. I don't know if it does. But, every day Billy Penn does the mayor's schedule. And he either has, if you looked at John Street's schedule.
Yeah.
Or Wilson's schedule or Nutter's schedule, they do 8 and 10 things a day.
Mm-hmm. Well,
he does one thing a day.
Let me ask
maybe.
About that though, because that was a huge issue in the in the primary, especially this idea we need someone with energy. Lauren, you brought it up earlier.
Yeah,
Parker clearly has that. Her energy is infectious.
Mm-hmm.
I am curious because all she does is win elections. I am curious.
She's a winner. Yeah.
I'll bring this to you, Mustafa. Why at her core, why do you think she seems to be so electable? Why does she always win?
Sherelle comes from a voter-rich section of the city.
Mm-hmm. Northwest Philadelphia.
And they over-represent, they overvote, and they always have. And so I think that's helpful. She has had the benefit of learning from some of the great political minds in the city. She was Marion Tasco and Gussie Clark and Dwight Evans. So she's had the benefit of being able to learn from them, and she does well at elections, I think, because she does a tremendous job of getting people to connect to her, and her stories they resonate. And one of the things I thought resonates well, I mean, she's a parent. There are a lot of parents in the city. There are a lot of parents of young men in the city who want to see the city be a safe place and think that person with these lived experiences has the best opportunity to do that for us.
She wasn't ever going to lose that primary.
Yeah.
Period.
Really?
Absolutely not.
Really? Because I think a lot of
people... She was never going to lose the primary.
We're backtracking a lot now, but I think a lot of people felt that Helen Gim, the progressive lane, and Rebecca Reinhart kind of split some votes,
and that did open up a path. That's why she was never going to lose the primary.
Okay,
Helen came in with her arrogance, and what Helen didn't realize is you have to have people like you, and no one liked her. And she was at 20% and never moved because all the geniuses around her thought that, we're going to do it. And Rebecca came in and just, did an inside straight against her. And there was one great lane for a terrific African-American because people do vote, that way. I mean, she only got 33% of the vote. It's not like she won in a landslide. She got fewer votes than Nutter did the first time around when he was dead last and with 7 weeks to go, shot by everybody because he made the campaign a referendum on who would be least like John Street. But she was never going to lose the primary. She didn't win in a great landslide. And she's a mystery right now. But what the question you're asking is, she's a mystery about what kind of mayor she's going to be because Lauren is right. There's no great, I don't care who the police commissioner is. The problem with the police department right now is we're 1,000 officers down.
Yeah. She's talked quite a bit about that.
And you know, she's got to figure out something, which is no one wants to be a police officer anymore.
Yeah.
I mean, across the country. If you drive out the main line and you go into the Wawa's in Ardmore, there are signs for the Lower Merion Police Department, which is pretty safe. No one gets shot in Lower Merion if you're a cop. $80,000 a year to start. Mm. So you can imagine how hard it's going to be for Mayor Parker to get people to come into this city where people aren't afraid to shoot at cops anymore, which is unbelievable, mm-hmm. to try to get 1,000 cops.
Yeah, and I got to ask you this, because and I want to talk about the progressive wing of the mm-hmm. Democratic Party. A lot of folks did not like Sherelle Parker. Email from James says, I'm glad we have a Democrat as a mayor, but I'm concerned about her conservative police law enforcement opinions. The National Guard has no place in Philly. He says, I think she's going to perform similarly to Lori Lightfoot in Chicago. Mm. In other words, she's making history as a black woman, but she's also too close to police interests for radical change to actually happen. This is one of our listeners. And Lauren, weigh in on that, because I see your head nodding, because a lot of progressives were not happy. O did get more votes than any Republican running for mayor in the past 20 years, even though it was only 25%.
And so. In a way, I think Sherelle is probably O's nightmare opponent in the general, because she was further right than him on public safety issues.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the disconnect between the progressive wing and where Sherelle and Sherelle's supporters are coming from. A lot of the progressive wing doesn't live in neighborhoods where they step outside their front door and have to worry about getting shot.
Mm-hmm.
And so
the here.
Yeah.
Yes.
And so it's one thing to say and criticize the positions that she is coming out with, but they're not the ones who are worried about sending their kids to school and having them get caught in, you know, a drive-by shooting.
Right. Yeah.
So I hear what he's saying, but I think there needs to be some reflection on the people who are being impacted by gun violence and not silencing their wants and their needs about what they want in their communities. So I think, again, this is where Sherelle's lived experience, and to Mustafa's point, she's raising a young black son. You know, she is more than aware of the interactions that happen between police and members of the black community in the city and how fraught those interactions can be. And so I think that's why she is really, you know, is empowered to make these decisions and make these calls in a way that, you know, the previous mayor was more hesitant to.
Go ahead. And this will be our last point on this. And we do have to get to council. So go ahead. Yeah.
Backtrack. Yeah. So backtracking quite a bit now. A few years ago, there was a very popular slogan called defund the police.
Uh-huh.
And I will tell you, by and large, that that's not something that black people ask for.
Mm-hmm.
I felt that mm-hmm. was something that a lot of liberal white Americans put out there. Black people, by and large, never asked for that. We asked for safe communities where police didn't abuse and mistreat us.
Mm-hmm.
But we did not ask for not to be police officers. When something's happening that requires police, and we want culturally competent police officers.
Yes.
When something happens, someone's breaking in my house, I'm not calling a social worker.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I'm not. I'm calling a police officer. That person may have some social issues, some health issues, and post-arrest, those should be treated. But at the time, I want a police officer who's culturally competent and capable to address that situation.
So I do want to get to council, and I want to talk – I actually want to bring in someone who won last night.
Yes.
A council member-elect, Rue Landau, is going to become Philly's first openly LGBTQ council member and is standing by to talk with us. Rue Landau, welcome to Studio 2, and congratulations.
Thank you so much, and thank you for having me.
So let's start here. What is at the top of your legislative agenda heading into your first term?
The legislative agenda. That's a good question, but I do want to just comment quickly on what you were just talking about.
Go ahead.
I absolutely think that what's top on everybody's mind is public safety.
Yeah.
And so long as you handle the legislative issues correctly, it all ties in, right? Safer neighborhoods. Neighborhoods where people can afford them, and great schools and whatnot, all the reinvestment we have to do in neighborhoods all ties in to making safer neighborhoods and gives people hope and opportunity. And I think that's the way and where we want to go. But you know me, I like housing. I want to make sure that every neighborhood is affordable to people so that folks can stay sadly, you know, going around the city, talking to people in neighborhoods throughout the city, it's clear that there's groups of people that if they have enough money, they're ready to move. And yeah. We are seeing that with people who do have enough money ready to move, who are moving. We need to keep the tax base here. We need to keep people in Philly. I'm a big recruiter, so I can't wait to bring more in. Mm-hmm. But making neighborhoods affordable and making sure we're not pushing people out when we start reinvesting in neighborhoods, both because of gentrification and also we need to make it so desirable that people want to stay. Yeah. And I do think a lot of this has to do with the schools, obviously public safety, and keeping it affordable. Taxes mm-hmm. and everything have to be affordable for people.
Yeah, and Rue, this is Cherry Gregg. Congratulations to you. Got to ask, because you, Nina Ahmad, will be the first South Asian American mm-hmm. council member. You're the first openly LGBTQ member of city council now in Philadelphia. I want you to talk about just sort of your experience working as an advocate for different communities, how you plan to put that to work, because there's so many new people in council now. How do you plan to put all of that to work to get your legislative agenda passed?
Mm-hmm. Well, first of all, it's super exciting and such an honor to be the first openly LGBTQ council person ever in Philadelphia. I really, you know, I don't take this honor lightly. This is, I know that representation matters and visibility matters. And I've heard from people all over the city and now people who are coming to me from across the state saying, thank you, having a seat at the table and having like a real role in crafting legislation and policy is incredibly important to all of us. So I hope to open the door up for many others and help lift them up along the way. I cut my teeth as an activist and then a legal services lawyer representing low-income tenants and then ran the city's civil rights and housing enforcement agencies. I've had my hands in many neighborhoods throughout the city helping to resolve conflicts and to, really add civil rights protections both to our laws and also to make sure that the city is enforcing those laws well. And I just want to continue doing a lot of what I'm doing. The great news is I am happy to be, a first and congratulations to Nina Ahmad too. It's an amazing thing to be a first. But I do know that I bring other skills to the table and other ways in which people know me and the work that I've done in the past that I can't wait to build on going forward. One of the issues in the city now, you were talking about the lack of staffing, and it's significant. It's significant everywhere. And some of the laws we have on the books, civil rights laws and otherwise, are great.
Yeah.
But if you don't have the people and the resources mm-hmm. to enforce them, then we're not getting where we need to be. And that I've heard over and over again.
Well, that is a person we're going to be hearing from over
for
the next
sure.
few years. Rue Landau, just elected city council at large. Congratulations again. And thank you for taking some time to join us on Studio 2.
Thanks so much for having me. Can't wait to talk to you again.
We're going to go to a break now shortly. We're going to keep this conversation rolling. We got to talk about city council, that body that Rue Landau is going to be serving on soon. We also want to talk a little bit about some statewide perspective, and we have another expert standing by on that. So keep it locked right here to WHYY Studio 2. A lot more to discuss this hour.
Here at Shortwave Space Camp, we escape our everyday lives to explore the mysteries and quirks of the universe. We find weird, fun, interesting stories that explain how the cosmos is partying all around us. From stars to dwarf planets to black holes and beyond, we've got you. Listen now to the Shortwave podcast from NPR.
Welcome on back to Studio 2. I'm Cherry Gregg here with my co-host, Avi Wolfman-Arendt. We are continuing our conversation about yesterday's election.
I will reintroduce our great panel of guests sharing their political insights. We have Neil Oxman, media consultant with the Campaign Group, Lauren Vitas with Enact Strategies, and Mustafa Rashid with Bellevue Strategies. Also joining us by phone is Christopher Nicholas with Eagle Consulting Group. We're going to get to Christopher momentarily. But first, Cherry, we want to talk a little city council, right?
Yeah, the top five solidified by incumbents Isaiah Thomas, Catherine Gilmore Richardson. We got newcomers Nina Ahmad Rulandau, and of course, Jim Herity held on to his seat. But then we got to talk about the Working Families Party. They've ousted all Republicans. And we have, you know, Kendra Brooks and Nicholas O'Rourke. They've been, both of those races have been called. What does this say about, you know,
the question is, go right ahead.
Yeah.
Bob Brady having a hissy fit, going crazy.
Who's the head of the Democratic Party?
Who's the head of the Democratic Party? You know, talking about expelling 100 committee people, like, you know, as I said last night, like the Stalin, purging them, like the Stalinist purges, which is the dumbest thing in the world to have said. When, you know, if you looked at it, there's no way the five Democrats were going to lose, ever. And the gap between the five Democrats winning and the Working Families people is huge. I mean, there was no... You know, there was never a threat to the five Democrats losing.
70,000 votes.
You know,
it's a big gap.
And it's sad. It's, in one sense, it's sad, not for me because I'm a Democratic consultant, but since the millions have left, what's happened to the Republican Party in the city is just, there's no opposition anymore.
Well, let me ask about that, though, because if I'm a Republican, I'm thinking, what else can we do? They ran two candidates that I think were viewed as moderate by Republican standards. They even got some key labor endorsements in these races, and they still lost both seats to a party that people had never even really heard of 4 years ago. So, Mustafa, let me ask you, did the Republicans make missteps here, or is there simply just no path left for this party in the city of Philadelphia?
I think it's a diminishing, if not almost entirely diminished, path. They were moderate candidates. They did a fantastic job of distancing themselves from the national party. They had some fundraising, and to your point, they had some key labor endorsements from the building trades, and it just still wasn't enough to get over the finish line. And so I don't know what the path would be for Republican at-large candidates, but it would have to be near perfect conditions or a backlash towards Democrats or working family members. Right. I think they may have to be a part of the solution.
And perfect pivot to you, because I got to talk about that 10th district race. You know, we have Brian O'Neill held onto his seat after all these years in
the
Northeast. He's the last Republican in city council. Did he, in your mind, win because of the district, which has a lot of Republicans? Or is he just good at his job? And will Republicans hold on in the future?
Bill Greenlee was on WHYY last night and had a great line. And he says people are very used to voting for Brian O'Neill in the 10th district because they've been doing it literally for 44 years. I think Brian is sort of like a classic, retail politician in a lot of ways. Constituent services. He's very responsive to what his district constituents want, and a lot of folks see him as kind of like the last stand between, you know, this is the 10th district that wanted to secede from Philadelphia and become Liberty County. And so I think it's sort of a unique district that he's in, and he's just an institution up there.
And Trump won some of those wards up
there.
Right. These are diehards.
So more bad news for Republicans.
Yeah.
We're going to bring in Christopher Nicholas now to talk about some statewide races.
Christopher, great setup, guys.
Well, look, I mean, Christopher, we have to talk about this.
Yes.
Republicans swept in the statewide judicial races, including that big race for the state Supreme Court, Dan McCaffrey beating Carluccio there. And that's not all. I mean, Republicans have lost both U.S. Senate seats. They've lost three straight governor's races. They lost the last presidential election here in Pennsylvania. This is supposed to be a swing state. What do Republicans need to do differently, Christopher Nicholas?
Before I answer that very brief question, I want to give a shout out to my former client, Brian O'Neill. I worked with him in his two previous contested elections. If he's proved anything, it's that Larry Krasner is still radioactively unpopular in the far Northeast, because that was the bulk of his campaign against Gary Messino, the union guy up there who couldn't decide whether he lived in Philly or Bucks County. Moving on to the statewide stuff, so congratulations, Brian. We have a situation in Philadelphia where the Republican nominee got about double the vote he should have gotten by registration. And in Allegheny County, you had a county executive race. They have home rule there, so they have a county executive, which is akin to a mayor, who got 48.5, 49.25%. So Republicans overperformed, did not win, obviously, overperformed in the two largest counties, but obviously came up short. So that was, to me, an interesting juxtaposition. Republicans have normally done better running female judges for judge races, which is why our ticket was three-quarters female this year. But again, they all went down. I believe, looking at the numbers recently, that our candidate for Commonwealth Court, Megan Martin, had the highest percentage, but was still not close at all, you know, to winning. So it was a bad day for the home, well, for my home team. And as Neil knows, because we've both been in this business forever, the only true actual fact in politics is that there's always another election coming up. My goal for Republicans is to, and I'm talking to the 12 or 13 Republican listeners that we have right now, let's focus less on how people vote and more on doing some persuasion to them. Because for us to keep and win majorities in the legislature and to win statewide races, we have to work on persuasion and not worry how people are voting by mail or on actual election day, right?
Yeah.
So that's about turnout. We, because there are anywhere from, depending on how you count it, 275,000 to 500,000 more D's than ours in the state.
Yeah.
You know, we don't need any help to win in Bedford County, right? Or in Cuyahoga County. But to win the swing seats, the seats that put us in the majority, we have to find better candidates, run better campaigns, and move on with more persuasion.
Yeah, and that's going to be the playbook for Republicans. And zooming out, we only got a couple more minutes before we have to wrap this up. But I got to ask you, that New York Times poll came out this week, showed that Joe Biden was trailing Donald Trump by 4 points outside of the margin of error. Yeah, we have a Democrat who ran for Supreme Court, won by 5 percentage points. Y'all explain this math here. What does it say as we look towards the future? And I want everybody to comment.
Yeah. Just two things.
Short,
number
though.
One, yeah. I think the polling data just over the last couple of cycles has just been proven over and over again how off it's been. So I'm hesitant to really put any weight in these polls.
You don't believe it, yeah.
And number two, it feels like the Republicans were the dog that caught the car on the abortion issue. It is still riling people up. It's a lot of the Moms for Liberty in Bucks County, they swept those seats back. So I think a lot of the issues, it's interesting to hear, we had to talk about persuasion. Well, if your ideas are the things that are driving Democrats to the polls, I'm not sure persuasion is going to kind of get you there.
Mustafa, that discrepancy, the Biden versus sort of Democratic outcomes discrepancy. Your thoughts?
Yeah, we mentioned at the outset that yesterday for Philadelphia County is a test run for 2024.
Yeah.
And Bob Casey won Philadelphia. He won Pennsylvania in 2018 with 11% of the vote coming out of Philadelphia. When Fetterman ran last year, was 8%, so it's trending in the wrong direction.
Mm-hmm.
So Philadelphia needs to figure out how to get those numbers going back up. Biden's, in my opinion, Biden's support in those polls are that it's shrinking. It's mostly because of African American voters, and so he's got a year or less than a year to figure out how to shore those numbers back up, because you cannot win the presidency with less than 80% African American vote, and that's where he is right now, is below 80%.
Neil, real quickly,
I think there's less than a 50% chance right now that Joe Biden's going to win Pennsylvania. It's scary. In 2016, Gary Johnson and Jill Stein got almost 200,000 votes as independents in Pennsylvania. If Bobby Kennedy's on the ballot, if Cornel West is on the ballot, Democrats are scared about Joe Biden's age. Two-thirds of Democrats do not want him to run again. He's not only has he lost African-American support, he's lost a lot of young people's support in the national polls and Hispanic support. And it's really scary for Pennsylvania's electoral votes if he's the nominee in 2024.
And Christopher Nicholas, let me bring you in about 15 seconds here.
Sorry, Chris.
I'm leaving you with this one. How worried are you about 2024 based on 2023? Or do you think it's a whole new ball game?
No, I think it's a new ballgame, but look, we have to defend our Auditor General, our Treasurer, try to win back Attorney General. I am interested in that polling only in that there were so many swing voters who said they would not vote for Trump if he was convicted of a felony. There was like a 13-point swing numbers on that. So
always got to check the cross tabs. Yeah. Absolutely. we have to leave it there. That's Christopher Nicholas, Eagle Consulting Group. We were also joined this hour by Lauren Vitas, Enact Strategies, Mustafa Rashid, Bellevue Strategies, Neil Oxman, media consultant with the Campaign Group. Thank you all for being here. It was an enlightening conversation.
Thanks.
Yes,
Thank you for having us.
And that wraps our show for today. Great show today. Our producers are Debbie Builder, Paige Murray Bessler, and Andreas Copes. Al Banks was our engineer for today from Studio 2 at WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Cherry Gregg.
And I'm Avi Wolfman. Aaron, thank you everyone for joining us.